From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Your body's got me weak. Your Mozart in the sheets. You make a sinner out of me.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com. So, baby, you got that heart made of gold, baby. I'm gonna love you till I'm old, baby. I just wanna be your baby.
I like your soul.
Who are we listening to here, Boomer? Like
Lee Bryce.
Country how superstar. How we doing this morning?
Country superstar.
He is a superstar?
We're good. Lee Bryce?
Yeah.
Not on the same vein as Garth Brooks. Not Kenny Chesney, but he's next tier.
Okay.
Awesome. Good guy. Been around a while.
He fill up
middle,
T-Mobile Arena?
Middle tier? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. Not yeah. Keith Urban, who filled up T-Mobile Arena last Thursday.
Did you go to that?
I did not. That was an auction item at Bloomapalooza.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
you were doing a charity event yesterday.
Yeah, shout out to everybody with For the Kids, Kevin Timmons and John Barnes and all the people with that crew yesterday at Blue Hills and Country Club of Leawood. We'll get the final numbers here pretty soon, but I'm sure they raised pretty close to $1 million, if not more than that, last night. So. Actually, yesterday, not just last night. Emily and I volunteered, and good time.
That's
good event.
I tell you what, too, that Kevin Timmons and what those guys have done is really is powerful and inspiring. And now, as a parent of three children, including a kid who's I guess he's a teenager. He's about to turn 13, and is in middle school. Which to me was the worst time of life. I think middle school was just the freaking worst when I was in. It was that when I was that age, you just live in fear that your kids are doing all right.
Yep.
You know,
what they've done for mental health Children's Mercy, and thank you to all the Children's Mercy people that were there last night as well, and all their volunteers. And yeah, it's been a pretty amazing. I don't know how long they've been doing it. To be honest with you, maybe 10 years. They've been doing that tournament, and I'm one of the few tournaments I don't golf in.
Yeah.
I just want to volunteer and help. And so,
yeah.
Shout out to Kevin and Tracy McDonald and everybody that's on the team that helps put that event on. Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
Because it was hard when I was in seventh grade, you know, and I feel like it's so, and just talking to all those folks at Children's Mercy. I'm a part of a program they have called this Red Card Campaign, where we go to schools and try to, you know, preach anti-bullying and all that stuff. But you know what? It exists.
Well, and you can't do enough.
Yeah, you can't do enough. And it's just so much more magnified in today's world because of technology. Stuff that we didn't have to deal with when we were kids that just puts it right in your face.
Well, and to couple that with what just happened with the pandemic and everybody's home and you're doing online learning and you're not actually in school and getting those... Yeah. You know, understanding how that all goes, man. What a kind of a minefield to work through as a parent, as a child in this day and age.
And getting your kid, I'm learning this whole thing with the first kid that's hitting the teenage years. Getting your teenager to talk to you.
Good luck. How's that going?
Oh boy! Every once in a while, you catch him in a mood. You know, every once in a while, he'll actually talk to me, and then it's just like. Don't go anywhere. You know, just like talk, you know.
Can we keep doing this?
Yeah. So it's tough. It's a really important thing, and that's really cool that you guys did that yesterday. Good. So how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Golf tournaments today, next Monday, the following Monday. It's fall game day in Lawrence.
You coming?
Will you be there?
Oh, yes.
All right. I'm excited for Lawrence. I saw Gurley was at the tournament yesterday. and Bill Self was there last night. It's comical is probably not the word, just because they've been so not good for the last however many years, and to get where they're at in five games, like, yeah, it's bananas.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, it does make you laugh. You're just like, yeah, this is what we do. We just win Kansas. We just 5-0 football. Like, here we go.
Right, right.
It just seems absurd.
It happens so fast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was, I think Stephen called me an overconfident KU fan because I thought Kansas had a shot at West Virginia. Remember that? I was like, he was like, I mean, you actually think you can keep making a game up there? And I was like, I mean, I'm not saying we're going to win, but I think they can keep it a game.
Yeah, they were two touchdown underdogs, yeah. And you were like, no way, they can't lose by that much.
I was like, they're going to keep that to a one-score game, I think. You know, that was overconfident. That was absurd. Come right. on, man.
Well, I mean, what was the over-under? 2.5?
2.5 wins. I mean, they're right. 5 already. It's just, right. it's right. outrageous. And so, yeah, it's and the thing is, you know, for it's funny, like, I was talking to my wife about this. I did the sidelines for KU football for 11 years. My cousin John Bucati played football at KU when I was in college. His dad Fred was a captain on a KU football team that went undefeated, and he went and played for the Denver Broncos for a while. So, like, KU football was always a big thing in our family. And back when I was doing the sidelines early on, I think it was only my second or third year on the job that they went to the Orange Bowl. And that was somewhat similar. Like, there had been a little bit more of a buildup. They'd sure. been to one bowl game under Mangino. Then I think my first year on the job, they won 6 games but didn't get invited to a bowl game. And then the next year, they go, you know, they're undefeated going into Armageddon at Arrowhead. It was the same type of thing where there was a little bit more of a buildup. So you thought, hey, we thought we were going to be a decent team. But it wasn't until a few games into the season where you're like, they just keep winning. They just keep winning games. And my wife and I at that time, I think we were not even married yet. You know, we were dating pretty, you know, very seriously. And since we
courting, you were courting.
Yeah, we were in courtship. but we didn't have kids. We were young in our, you know, we were in our 20s, like, and we. My wife came to, like, as many road games as you could. You know, if you could drive, we would drive, you know, sure. Manhattan, Stillwater, all these places. We, you know, she'd sit in the stands with the families, and then we'd go have a couple beers at the local bar afterwards and celebrate that the team won a game again. We had so much fun. And we would go up to Lawrence and college game day, whatever town, you know, if you're a K-State fan, Missouri fan, whatever town you're from or whatever school you went to, going back to the, you know, to campus – on college game day is just it's a blast. You go to the bars you used to go to when you were in college. You walk down memory lane. Well, that was a long time ago now. Sure. You know, and we've got 3 kids now. And right, we don't right. do that anymore because we got kids games every weekend. And we finally decided, look, I'm supposed to be coaching my daughter's soccer game on Saturday. And my wife and I were talking about it. We said, you know, we haven't been up to a game
gotta go.
Together in years.
So I heard how many Power 5 schools have never had game day there, and KU was one of them. Was it? I can't even remember. They said it on the air the other day.
Not very many or a lot?
No, there's only 5.
Oh,
like,
really?
Only 5 Power 5 schools have not had game day at their place over, I don't know how many long they've been doing
Kansas
game day, 20 years.
Yeah.
Kansas is one of them.
Yeah.
So there was some talk about it a couple weeks ago because they had been at App State. Like, if you're going to mm-hmm. go to App State, might as well go to Lawrence. Well, I think that was on the radar, and then they just won again. And mm-hmm. so, kudos.
Yeah.
Kudos. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, Cal, Duke, Illinois, Rutgers, and Syracuse.
There it is.
Haven't had one.
Cal, Duke.
And Syracuse is undefeated. So tell Saran, maybe game day's in Syracuse next week.
How fun would that be?
I don't know who they play next.
It's, honestly, like, and it's.
So they got TCU, right?
Ooh. Yeah, undefeated Ooh. TCU. I mean, they just put up 668 yards.
I looked up on Saturday, and I was like, oh, my God, they just put up 27 yeah. points on Oklahoma in the
Lebo
first quarter.
Lebo texted me, he's like, we've given up 4 touchdowns of over 60 yards or whatever it was in this
first
game.
Half.
It's like, oh, ouch. I'm going to hope yeah. that's a lot about your defense and not, you know, not as much about TCU's offense, but we'll see. But and that's the thing is, I think as a KU fan, I still don't really have any. They've already exceeded my expectations this year, and I thought my expectations were
4 wins.
Oh, I think they're going to win 4 games this year.
Right. which is a big deal.
And maybe have a chance to win five, you know, and they've already done that. So it's like, it's all gravy. And I think they're going to, I think it'll be a good game. I'm not expecting them to win.
I love listening to Coach Leipold on the, before I'm on, you know, I'm sitting in the car listening to him every Tuesday now for the last 5 weeks. Like, man, I've got to follow him.
Right?
Hey.
Nothing sexy about what, you know, what he has to say. He's just
getting it done.
Do the job every day. Yep. Don't lose sight of it. We're trying to decide. Kelly and I are trying to decide. Well, first of all, we got to figure out like where we're going to get each kid. We're still working on the logistics of who's going to watch the three children on Saturday and how early we can get them dropped off at places. Because we want to get up to campus as early as possible.
Sure.
Because it's like the wheel's going to be a
mayhem.
Zoo.
It's going to be mayhem.
And we like that was my wife's bar was the wheel. You know, she lived right by the wheel. That was her spot. And
old
we would,
Farha at the wheel.
Yeah, we would go there back when we were, you know, when I was doing the games and we didn't have kids and all that stuff. We would stop by the. I was the Louise's West guy, so we would kind of like alternate who was going to West and who was going to the wheel, you know, and we would do both and have a good time. And I want to do that stuff, you know.
Is
it's
the
like
Hawk still there?
I
Caddy
think it's,
corner?
Yeah, it's still there, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I was just there Saturday night.
The bull's been rehabilitated and it's actually kind of nice now, which I don't know how I feel about that. Like it's not supposed to be nice; it's supposed to be the bull, you know.
Right.
But it's like, so do you go stop by the wheel before the game, or do you just go to campus and check out game day?
I'm trying to hitch my way up there with somebody. Yeah. I've invited myself to a bunch of different groups. Well, you know, Jermaine Dye's son is playing there.
Yeah.
So Jermaine was in town, I think, last weekend.
Oh, that's cool.
I think
cool.
His daughter might have been on a recruiting trip. I heard through the grapevine, through, you know, my KU peeps.
Yeah.
So I'll have to reach out to Jermaine this week and see.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I don't need to be in the crowd of the game day stuff.
You do.
I can just like stand on the outside and watch it and see it. But just to like, hey, it's you know. So
it's exciting.
I remember this one time when Kansas got to I think 11-0 that Orange Bowl season. I think their win was against Iowa State to get to 11-0 at the end. It was like toward the end of the year. And I was doing post game, so it took me a while to get out to meet my buddies who were out kind of, you know, post game tailgating or whatever. And I said, hey, man, we got to go hit up West or hit up the wheel or something. And a couple of guys were like, I don't know. I'm a little tired. I think I'm going to go home. And I said, yeah, you know what? Let's go out and celebrate next time KU's 11-0.
Right.
Let's, you know, since this happens all the time around here, let's just go home today. And then next time they're 11-0, we'll go out and we'll party. And, I mean, I knew at that time how this is an occurrence that we might not ever like. This is not a common thing at Kansas. I didn't realize like how bad it was gonna get, you know, for the next decade.
Right.
Like not only is this team never gonna sniff 11-0 again, they're not gonna sniff a bowl game. They're not gonna sniff relevance. They're gonna be just like the worst program in Division I football for 10 years.
What year did they go to the Orange Bowl?
I want to say that was 2007 season and 2008 Orange Bowl. Is that right?
All right. So 2009, you see all the graphics going on. I didn't realize they won their first five.
Yeah.
And then lost their next seven.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the year that Mangino got fired. And in fact, like, and I sent out a tweet and I said, last time this team was 5-0, this kid was roaming the sidelines because one of those wins was at El Paso. And I, for some reason, got a picture of myself standing outside the press box looking over the mountains in El Paso. And you know, they lost a couple games. They lost a few games in a row, and that's when Lou Perkins opened up the investigation. And I mean, this program has paid the price ever since.
Yep.
And which is why KU fans are so freaked out about the idea of Leipold leaving, because they finally got a good coach again, you know. But you just got to enjoy it while you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, see what happens. Hope it lasts. But to me, it's like, as a KU football fan, you don't worry about how long it's going to last. You just enjoy it while it's happening, you know, because you know, like, these things don't come around that often. So that'll be fun, man. We're going to go up there. I'm looking forward to it, you know, just to be on campus and enjoy it. I think, and by the way, if you are thinking about getting tickets, I talked to Jason Booker in the athletics department yesterday. The game is not officially sold out yet, so you can go get tickets at face value at KUAthletics.com. They fully expect to announce a sellout by Wednesday. So,
yeah, no doubt.
So get on it if you want to. If you don't want to have to go to the secondary market to buy tickets, I would say do that like now. If you're okay with, you know, going to the secondary market, ticketsforless.com, ticketsforless.com. Absolutely. You'll be able to get seats wherever you want to go. Cause I,
I think that
thing's going to be sold out here.
No doubt.
They're definitely expecting to, announce a sellout here by Wednesday. All right, Bluma, the Royals are playing out the string here and it hadn't been going very well over the last few games, but they did get a 5-2 win over the Guardians yesterday. They're 65-95. Drew Waters hit a big 3-run home run. And Bobby Witt Jr., did you see this statistic? This from Sam Mellinger. And this is incredible stuff. He's now got 20 home runs and 30 stolen bases, right?
Yep.
The last five players who are 22 years old or younger to get 20 home runs and 30 stolen bases in a season: Bobby Witt Jr., Ronald Acuna, Mike Trout did it twice before he was 22, Alex Rodriguez, and Barry Bonds.
That's an impressive group.
That's a decent
How
company.
How old's Rodriguez with the Mariners? 22?
Good question. Good question. I don't know that. I don't know that answer. But how crazy is that when you look at?
So we talked about it a little bit last week. Like, you know what? Everybody's a little bit worried about his batting average. That's less of a statistic than it's ever been, just mm-hmm. based on, you know, today's metrics and all that stuff. But all the things that he's done this year, when you collectively put everything together. Like, what a great year with everything except, I mean, he's hitting .255, you know, everything
Julio
else.
Julio Rodriguez is 21 years old, but he has only 25 stolen bases.
But he has 25 home runs as well.
He dies 27 home runs.
So I guess a 25-25, that probably hasn't happened very little as well. So
A-Rod was 22 that year. He had 42 home runs and over 30 stolen bases.
That's impressive.
With the Mariners.
Well, I mean, kudos to him. And Bobby Witt, not kudos to A-Rod, but hey, what an unbelievable talent A-Rod he even was back then.
Yeah.
I played against him in high school when he was at Westminster Christian in Miami. We actually played at Royals Complex in Florida when I was still in high school. And just to see him, he was a man among boys back then. So to see somebody with that kind of hype, same with Bobby Witt Jr., you know, where he was picked in the draft, all the things that have been, you know, heaped upon him all along, and to make it to the big leagues. There's a lot of guys get a lot of stuff heaped on them, and then, you know, he struggled a little bit in, you know, April and May, maybe a little bit, and now, you know, over the course of an entire season, which is the most he's ever played by far, mm-hmm. you know, with COVID and all those things. So, you know, how many games has he played? He's only missed a couple days this entire season.
He's played 148 games.
There you go. So he's going to end up playing 150 games. I mean, and to stay on the field and be there day in, day out, and, you know, get 600 at-bats and to do what he's done, I'm so excited. I mean, we've all been excited. I think he's exceeded expectations just for the simple fact of there were so many expectations on him to go out and do it day in, day out, and do it defensively and do it offensively and do all the things that he does. He's a reason to buy a ticket and go watch baseball every single day.
Yeah, so, and look, you touched on something. He has not had a perfect rookie season or anything. I mean, when you look at, like, we're talking about Julio Rodriguez from Seattle. He's played 130 games. His OPS is over 100 points higher than Bobby Witt Jr.'s. Bobby's is .726. Rodriguez is .850. So Rodriguez, and that's the thing, like, for Bobby Witt Jr., the .250 batting average, like you said, that's not as important, but it's coupled with the .295 on base percentage. I'm sure one of the things he's going to want to work on is add 50 points to that on base percentage. However you do it, whether that's adding 25 points to your batting average and 25 points to, you know, adding more walks in that regard, or if it's just drawing more walks as the season, as your career develops. If he can get that on-base percentage up 50 points, and add a little bit to the slug, you're talking about an incredible player. That's the thing that's so amazing about Rodriguez. I mean, the dude's got a 345 on base percentage, and he's slugging 506. And that's not to – this is not to cut down – I mean, Bobby Wood Jr.'s having a really, really
good any other year, he's probably rookie of the year, but not this year.
Yeah. So, but it just goes to show you, too, I think the exciting thing is there's room for growth for Bobby Wood Jr.
Well, I mean, and that's – he understands that, too. That's the great thing about it. I mean, how much he loves the game and how much he goes out there and does it every single day. And, you know, I mean, this is October. We're in October. I mean, you've been playing since spring training. So for him to go through 162 healthy, knock on wood, I mean, there's only a couple left. I will give a shout out to Cleveland rookie Will Brennan, Blue Valley grad, K-State alum. Got called up, I think he's been in 9 games, so a little bit over a week ago. Good for him, man. Just a good kid from here. Again, another, you know, local kid, done well. Went to K-State, raked. I see him working out with guys at home field every offseason. And I think he's going to be on their playoff roster. I'm excited for him. So,
hey, I'll tell you what. He's gotten 10 games. It's a small sample size, but he's hitting 350. You know, he's got a home run. He's got a triple.
Those are both on Sunday, I think. Yeah,
he's 7 ribbies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey.
Good for him. Awesome. 24
years old. Yeah.
Congratulations, Will Brennan, and to your family and everybody that's been a part of your journey to the major leagues. Another Blue Valley kid done well.
Yeah, awesome. That is awesome. All right, so we're looking at the playoff race, right? The Yankees
kind of wrapped up in the American League.
Yankees in the East, Guardians in the Central. By the way, Tony La Russa stepping down after his White Sox went 80-80, and the Astros in the West. Wild cards for the Blue Jays, Rays, and Mariners. What do you think?
The only race is the National League, I guess. Philadelphia, Milwaukee, the last wild card. How about the Braves playing out their ass late, beating the Mets and sweeping the Mets over the weekend, 2 games up, 3 games to play. That's been kind of fun to watch. I mean, obviously Kevin Seitzer, local guys over there, is a hitting coach. Sal Fasano that I played with, defending World Series champs. Nobody's really talking about them. That's kind of the funny thing. It's just everything's about the Dodgers. Everything's about the Yankees, all this. So they're happy to slide under the radar and sneak back into the playoffs. And do what they do. Everything Albert Pujols is doing in St. Louis, this is a fun year to watch baseball. I mean, I'm a purist. I love all the things going on. And, you know, for him to do what he's done and be so gracious about it, and I just love the game and a couple things like that. I mean, you can hate the Yankees and all the things, Yankees, whatever, but what Aaron Judge is doing, I mean, he's got 20 more home runs than anybody else in the league. That's crazy. I'm not a Yankees fan either, but just – the historical significance of some of the things that go on that we probably won't see again. I mean, that's why you can tune into baseball every single day and see something that you may not see again next year.
The Braves sneaking in with 100 wins.
Right, right.
100 wins, and nobody's noticing because they have 10 fewer wins than the Dodgers. Oh, incredible stuff. All right, Bluma, what else you got going on? What's coming up? What do people need to know about?
Come see us at home field, homefieldkc.com, 913-320-4404. Fall ball's probably wrapping up, so get figured out what you're going to do for the winter. Camps and clinics coming up all winter. We've teamed up with Building Champions is now in the building, so come see us over there. As always, I got lessons again today. Any day, every day, get a hold of me, do some lessons. Thank you again to all the crew at Blue Hills and Leawood Country Club, Country Club of Leawood, I think is the name of it.
Yep.
For the golf tournament yesterday for the kids. Bloomapalooza, thank everybody again. We end up raising over $100,000.
Oh, wow.
For Bloomapalooza a week ago Saturday. And thank you for all you guys do. And good luck, Stephen St. John.
Yeah, we got to get Stephen healthy. We got to get this guy healthy, that's for sure. All right, Bluma, thanks for coming in, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for all you're doing for the community as well.
Enjoy Lawrence this weekend.
We will.
Yeah.
We'll have a good time.
I'm going to try to sneak up there.
You want to babysit a 2.5-year-old?
I do not.
Okay. No. All right. I'm just working on that. keep working on that. we gotta find some coverage. All right, back after this with Joe Valerio. We transition back to football right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Do this?
Yeah, you know, what's up, guys?
What's up, man? Boys are in effect, yeah, and it's about time. Yo, let's rip this up.
Oh, man, when this song gets going, you could not keep a young Nate Bucati off the dance floor at the Bishop Ward High School Mixer. It also means it's time to talk to our Philly guy, who's also a KC guy, Joe Valerio, our weekly conversation with the former chief. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Nate, how you doing, buddy? God, you got me going with that song. I keep waiting to see, you know, when are we going to run out of Philly songs?
You know,
when are we...
There's a lot of good music that's come out of Philly or been written about Philly, isn't there?
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's a music town. You know, it's got good music roots, and it's a perfectly sized city. You know, for Kansas City and area listeners that haven't been to Philadelphia, it's got enough culture and things to do: restaurant scene, music scene, arts, whatever you're into. But it's very manageable. You know, it's got everything you'd want in a big city, but it's much more parochial and neighborhood feel, like a smaller town. That's why Kansas City to me was always such an easy transition, because it made, even though Philly's bigger, I felt like I was in Philly when I was in Kansas City, just by the way it feels, because Kansas City has that same feel to it. You know, it's big enough to stay busy, but small enough that you get to know people, which is really cool, which is one of the very attractive parts of KC.
Hell yeah. That's right, man. That's and maybe that's why there's this interesting connection between Philadelphia Eagles fans and Chiefs fans, between Dick Vermeil and Andy Reid and Joe Valerio and all that stuff. So it's kind of fun. Hey, what's going on with the podcast? Tell us, tell people how they can listen to it. I understand you had Grunny on your most recent episode.
We did. We had Grunny on talking about his book, and it was a blast. He is so good, and he just connects with both, you know, the interviewers and the listeners so well. He's so darn good at what he does, and it was great to have him on telling stories, promoting the book, and I'm just really excited for him for that venture. And, you know, it makes my day to catch up with him. It brings back so many great memories, and he's just such a good person. And, man, what an incredible staple he's been in that city, you know, of Kansas City, and staying connected with the community and raising his family there. And he was my mentor. He was the guy that took me under his wing and helped me extend my career as long as I possibly could. And he just was always obviously hold a very special place in my heart, for sure.
So, and how can people listen to the podcast?
So, yeah, so Believe in Chiefs, B-L-E-A-V, Believe in Chiefs, doing with my podcast partner, Jeff Vedotin, who writes for Forbes, among some other editorial ventures and things that he does. Jeff's a Kansas City native, grew up, went to high school in Kansas City, and was actually just back in town. And he's, you know, his family's still there, and he's you know, got Kansas City roots. So we love just chopping it up, talking Chiefs and everything NFL, and it's been a ton of fun. And so you can follow at Joe Valerio 73 is another way to follow in. We post some clips and things like that. So just love staying on top of things and love talking about this great team of ours and the great city of Kansas City.
Okay, so let's get into some NFL stuff, Joe, and let's start with the Chiefs. What was your biggest takeaway from their performance against the Bucs on Sunday night?
The run game. You know, God, you know, maybe I need to have Grunny on every week, because, you know, we were talking about that off air before we started recording, and, you know, with Eric and Andy getting the run game going and really committing to the run, and they sure did that. One of the things that I didn't mention on our podcast when we recorded it last night, it'll be, you know, airing, and we'll post it here shortly, but was, I feel like one of the things that has really helped this Chiefs running game is the competition between Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Isaiah Pacheco. I know Andy wanted to create some competition this year. He did it at right tackle, right? Andrew Wiley earned the job. You know, he did it a little bit at receiver, right? We had a lot of receivers going in the training camp, and he and Eric created some competition there. There's nothing like a little competition to spark things, and you need that in the NFL. You don't want complacency. And I think the competition between Clyde and Isaiah is sparking this run game because they're both running. I saw a great tweet that Isaiah Pacheco, he runs every play like it's his last time he'll ever touch the ball. And I think that is pushing Clyde. I think it's pushing Isaiah. And I think it's pushing this offensive line to do better and finish their blocks and work better together and get more push and not position block. And I love it. You know, well, here's another thing I think it's really important about the run game. When you look at their average yards per rush of, you know, of course, take Patrick out of it because they're scrambles and, you know, things like that. So if you're just going for the pure running game, the handoff, so to speak, you know, looking at their averages, you know, Clyde's averaging 4.8 and Isaiah averaged 5.7 in that Bucs game. But what's really special about it is that there was no run over 20 yards to throw that average off, right? It's one thing to average 10 yards a carry when you have a 100-yard, you know, run, you know, or a 98-yard scamper down the field, right? This is 4, 5, 6 yards a pop ground. We used to call, when I coached high school football, we called it a ground and pound. And I love that because what it does, obviously you saw what it did in the passing game and allowed Patrick to make some spectacular plays and to do some great things with the ball. So I love what they're doing with the run game. I love that they're committed to it. And I love what Isaiah and Clyde are doing for each other right now, that 1-2 punch.
Okay, so I like the phrase that you just used, committed to it, because we haven't really ever seen this team be super committed to the run game during the Andy Reid era. And we know he's always going to be a guy that will tend more to the passing game than the running game. There was the game a couple years ago against the Buffalo Bills where they committed to the run game for that one day, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire had this incredible game. But that was kind of an aberration from the rest of the season. And this time around, the Chiefs, I think the context of what happened last weekend against the Colts comes into play, because there was this business, like everybody we've talked to that was in the Chiefs locker room through the course of the week talked about how serious everybody was. They got their butts whipped against the Colts, and so they were coming out to make a statement against a really good defense in the Buccaneers that's not the team we are. So it's one thing to do it for a week, right? When your manhood's been questioned a little bit and everybody's ramping up for it. Do you think this is going to be something they remain committed to as the season goes on, and week in, week out, we see them grounding and pounding a little bit? Or was this one of those deals where this was a one-week moment in time, and then they're going to go back to being the kind of sling-it-around Chiefs that we're used to seeing?
I guess the best thing I can say right now to not counter that, but to go along with what you're saying, is I hope so, because I think if they're going to be successful this year, given what I call the diversity of their wide receiving core, the big guy, the fast guy, the possession guy, right, the quick guy, they've got a very different receiving core this year than they did in the past. And I think to best utilize that, they're going to have to open up every single option that they have, and they're going to have to commit to the run if they're going to be successful. Because look at the Bucs. I mean, you know, yeah, Tom Brady, you know, I think people were, look, you know, we know our rivalry with Tom Brady, and we know his rivalry with everybody else in the NFL, except either if you're from New England or Tampa. But he had a great game. I mean, he was 39 of 52. He threw for 385 yards. They rushed for 6. and they still only could come up with 31 points. They couldn't be, they were, you know, they were being dominated pretty much the whole game. Let's be honest. I mean, that was a Chiefs win. It got a little close there with the 10 points at the end, but let's call it what it is. It was a dominating performance by the Chiefs. So even with that, Tom couldn't win that game on his own shoulders. And you've got to have, even when he was going through his big dynasty building with Belichick and the Patriots, like, they always had a running back that they could control the game with. And I think that's, to me, could be this missing piece and a little bit of an ingredient to the secret sauce that makes this Chiefs team score 35 to 40 points a game, right? As opposed to, you know, winning games 21 to 10 or, you know, 21 to 20. I think it's going to open things up for them and give, you know, Eric Bieniemy the entire playbook. And I think long answer to a short question, Nate. I they've got to commit to it if they want to be successful in this ultra competitive AFC for sure.
I've almost never asked a short question in my life, Joe. So you know, I appreciate you you being kind to me in that regard. But long answer to a long question. We're, you know, tit for tat here. But you know, in all seriousness, the I think we also have to remember the way the game plays out affects some of these things, right? The Chiefs got up to a huge lead in this game, so you're more likely to continue to run the ball. And if you're the Buccaneers and you're trailing by multiple scores almost the entire game, you're more likely to throw it. And that leads me to evaluating the defensive performance in this game. We had Adam Teicher on yesterday, and he said, yeah, you can look at it and say, well, Tom Brady threw for 385 yards and three touchdowns, and your defense gave up 31 points. That doesn't tell the story of the defense. As Adam, this was Adam's viewpoint on it. He said, the defense did exactly what they needed to do. They were staked to a huge lead, and they made sure that Tom Brady didn't get any points back in one big chunk or one big play. They made him move the ball down the field, and they managed the game exactly the way they should have. Overall, I'm curious, when you take into context the Bucs' performance as well, what do you make of the Chiefs' defense four games into this season?
Well, I think it's becoming one of their strong points, right? I mean, for years, it was, you know, I always go back to the fans that can remember. Now I'm going way, way back to the Don Coryell Chargers days with Dan Fouts and a defense where, you know, they would be lucky if they won by a point and the Chargers would score 51 and lose, or they would, or and they would lose the game like 52 to 51. Like, that was a sad time for the Chargers and back in the days in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, you never want to become, you know, that team, right? You want to win all three facets of the game. The Chiefs won the offensive battle, of course. They won on special teams this past week against the Bucs, and I think their defense won. And if you can do that, you know, you are giving yourself some great odds to win. So I think this defense is becoming one of their stronger points, and I think it's probably improving at a faster pace than their offense is. Hard to improve on their offense when you look at what they have. Patrick Mahomes, they got this running game going. They've got a very, like I said, a diverse and varied receiving core. Of course, they've got Travis Kelce, who's, you know, an incredible weapon. So there's not a lot. I mean, you can't make a ton of you're going to be making incremental improvements on offense when you've got that kind of talent. But I think their defense is making exponential improvements, and I think their Coach Spags is so much further along four games in than he has been in the past. I think he's got, you know, I'm going to stop saying it now that it's October, and I've been saying it all leading up to this season, and I've said it many times since this new collective bargaining agreement and everybody's easing up on training camp, that September is the new preseason. And now I can stop saying that because the preseason is now over and it's October and it's time to get gritty. But I think the defense showed in these four games much more improvement than they had in any of the four games in the past 2 to 3 seasons. And I think they're putting players in the right spot. And, you know, when Willie Gay comes back, you know, I think they'll be hitting even more cylinders than they are right now. So I really think they're finding the way, and I'm really happy with the way they're playing. Look, nobody wants to give up 31 and you know, 385 yards in the air, but, you know, like Adam said, they did what they needed to do. They didn't let Tom Brady get into that zone that he can get into where, okay, he's down by 14, no big deal. So I think it's great. I think this Raiders game will give them a lot more confidence going into the Bills, because I think they're going to be able to put together a defensive game plan that's going to give them a springboard into that Bills game.
Okay, so it's Raider week now. The Raiders on Monday Night Football, I'm sure that conjures up all sorts of emotions and memories for you. And this year's Raiders team, look, they're 1-3. Their three losses were very close games. And when we talk about committing to the run game against the Broncos last weekend, their first win of the season, the Raiders ran the ball 38 times for 212 yards against the Broncos defense. What do you make of this matchup, and what memories come up or what thoughts and emotions come up for you when it comes to Raider week?
Well, you know, you can't not hear, you know, NFL films, and I'm, you know how much I love to sing, even though I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but you know, I hear bum 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 bum.
Like Autumn Wind is a Raider.
Oh, like who doesn't hear that, right? Growing up, you know, I used to get chills, and I'd go out in the yard and I'd throw the ball to myself and play that song in my head and hum it and sing it. And you know, look, it's a great rivalry, and I want Kansas City fans to keep that in their hearts because it is a great rivalry. We don't want the dilution of the NFL and the parity to lose those rivalries that we've so come to love, and in the case of the Raiders, come to hate, right? But you know, it's a classic. It's a classic game. It's one of those games that, you know, 3-1 versus 1-3 sometimes doesn't really matter because it's Raider week, right? And Marty Schottenheimer, it was the only team that we ever played that Marty ever really made a to-do about. You know, he was a guy that said, your most important game is the next game. Like, he never circled games on the calendars, but I know in his heart he always circled Raider week. And I think that legacy has lived on. And, you know, but the harsh reality of it is, now let's put our, you know, prognosticator hats on, and I just don't see anything out of this Raiders team. I just, you know, a couple of matchups that I think, you know, people should be looking at, you know, is you know, obviously the run game, because Josh Jacobs is dangerous. He can, you just don't want the Chiefs to start slow and for the Raiders to do their version of ground and pound and let Josh Jacobs dictate, you know, time of possession and what the keeping the Chiefs off the field, right? Because that's going to be the biggest strategy of the Raiders, is keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. And I think they're going to try to overuse Josh Jacobs. The other matchup I see on the other side of the ball is, I love this one. It's Max Crosby, you know, versus Andrew Wiley, because they're college teammates. And that's going to be a fun one to watch. Andrew has always done well against their, what I would call their best defensive player, for sure. But, you know, it's always a fun one for me to watch because of that college teammate relationship that they have, and what those two guys must be saying to each other as they're beating each other up on Sunday, or well, in this case Monday night, so those are two things to watch out for. But I think it's going to be a two touchdown plus win for the Chiefs. I just don't. It's Monday night. The Chiefs are playing with a continued chip on their shoulder. It's not a trap game, because there are no trap games for this team. They are playing with such a chip on their shoulder, there's not going to be a letdown. I know we talked about it on our podcast when Jeff and I recorded it, but, you know, it's a sandwich game, right? You're coming between the big Bucks game, Tom Brady on the road. You think, you know, the fan base is thinking about Buffalo, right, and what that game is going to be like. And people are going, the 1-3 Raiders. So, but this Chiefs team, they have way too much to prove, and they're playing with too much of a chip on their shoulder, I think, to let that happen. So I don't see this as a trap or sandwich game for the Chiefs. I think it's a two-score, two-touchdown win for them.
Two-touchdown win for the Chiefs against the Raiders. All right, Joe, and we're out of time, so I guess we'll just have to check in with you about those undefeated Eagles again next week as well. Thanks for the time, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, buddy. We'll talk soon.
All right, that is a Joe Valerio. We'll take a break and a weather forecast from Gary Lezak right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Mr. Blue Sky's been out for a long time in Kansas City. Gary Lezak, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I know. It's, is dry. It's ridiculous. I don't like talking about droughts, but we're going to talk about it on KSHB 41. We're going to stress some of the farmers and what they're dealing with across Kansas. Exceptional drought increasing across southern and western Kansas. We're in a level 3 to 4 drought here in eastern Kansas and growing. It won't rain. I mean, in September, we had 84 hundredths of an inch of rain. We averaged over 4 inches of rain. And since July 1st, we've had 5.55 inches of rain. We averaged about 14 inches. So 8 to 9 inches of rain below average. If you're wondering why, if you overseeded your lawn and you're watering every day and your water bill is going up, because it won't rain. We had 1,300 inches of rain on September the 23rd on the first full day of fall. And it's the only rain we've had. And it's now October the 4th. Crazy. So I don't like it. I don't like talking about drought. It's just not good. So let's talk about the Chiefs.
Well, is it going to rain ever? I mean, like, is there any end in sight?
Nope. The only chance we're going to see is on Monday for Monday Night Football. It looks like there might be a few showers. It doesn't look that significant at this moment. So I wouldn't worry about that yet. We might even take it out. I just have a 20% chance of rain in there. So we'll see how that sets up. But the LRC, you know, we just predicted Hurricane Ian and Fiona and Earl. Earl was one of our top predictions of the year. And that curved off the East Coast and missed the East Coast, thank goodness. That was a strong one. Fiona was powerful. Was not that strong when it hit Puerto Rico, where they're having some issues. But it got a lot stronger after it passed there. And then we had, of course, Ian, which became one of the worst hurricanes to hit the United States. So they're still dealing with it. And there's a lot of questions about, you know, did they not evacuate early enough? Did people not take action? Because, you know, there's been over 100 fatalities now. Over 100 people have died in that hurricane in Florida. And think about that. And they were alive a week ago, all right? And now they're dead. It's just a horrible disaster, not to mention all the property devastation. That hurricane was predicted 10 months ago by the LRC. One of the local companies, a great company here in Kansas City, Operation Barbecue Relief. They're an amazing organization. I had been communicating with them all year, one of our Weather 2020 customers, and they were in position. They went to Florida a week ahead of time, and they knew about it months before. So they had all of their barbecue and supplies and mobile units in position in the Florida Panhandle waiting to go down into the area. They had all the rooms blocked. They stayed in Tampa, north of the direct hit was, and now they're delivering 60,000 meals a day, doing a wonderful effort to help in the relief efforts down there. But they knew that it was coming months ago. There's a way to do that. And the LRC is going to be one of those tremendous ways that the world is going to experience. That's why I'm retiring December the 1st. Do this. It's a passion of mine. I discovered the LRC back in 1987, 1988, and I am excited to bring this to the world, but it's frustrating. My peers, the meteorologists out there, think it's impossible. We just predicted Hurricane Ian. I can show it, and we're using it, and my peers don't get it, which is good, I guess. You know, I guess, because then I can build my business. But thanks for letting me talk about it, Nate.
Thank you for talking about it, Gary.
You're welcome. So now back to the Chiefs. You got me on a tangent.
Did I?
Yeah. I mean, Mahomes has had two really great games this year, obviously. I mean, against Tampa. And, you know, Tampa Bay is a very good defense. And we also have to understand how NFL games go. When the first play of the game is muffed kick or a fumbled kickoff, and the Chiefs have the ball, and we had a great play call to get, you know, to get Kelce into the end zone for a touchdown. Sometimes that sets the stage, but still, we've also seen the Chiefs blow leads, and so that's why I wanted them to win 48-19, so I didn't have to think about it. But we love games like that. But Brady, was something else. Brady had a good day, you know, and then Chiefs beat him. So that,
and they were never in the game. So
I know exactly. So the Chiefs kept the gas pedal on, and as you just talked about with Valerio, that was amazing. The running game by the Chiefs and the competition he talked about. So yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is talented, and those guys are talented. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch this continue to evolve.
Bye bye.
That's right. I think we have to go.
Bye, Gary.
Is that Marco's way to say goodbye?
That was Marco's very subtle way of saying it's time for you to go. He just push-broomed Gary off stage. Back after this with Mark Boerichter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.